takeaway from your report was that municipalities need to connect spending to revenue. Could you explain that?
Well, the basic intent behind that is to say that if you have a particular service that you're providing, you're going to be able to do it you will do it in the most efficient and fair manner if you can charge the users of that service for the service they use. The obvious example that comes up in here is charging people for tolls on major roads, major highways, where you would say, look, if you use that road, you pay for that road. And it's been found in a lot of the literature for years now, public finance literature on local governments, that the most efficient and accountable local governments are those who basically try to fund their service as much as possible from taxes on the people who use it. Now, you can't do that for all services. Neighborhood parks, you can't single out who uses it and charge them because it's basically a public good. It's available to everyone in the area and probably beyond the area. Water and sewer, of course, now cities do use user charges. There was a time when they used to fund some of it from property taxes, and they still do in some places in Quebec. But user fees now generally fund the entire amount of water and sewer, and it's deemed that's appropriate. In fact, they're now starting to fund stormwater in some cities. And here you can link the users, the people who use the service, then are the people who pay for the service. And that seems to be fair in the eyes of most people. You know, you use, you pay. So that's essentially what we mean by trying to link services with the services provided to the revenues for those services.
So to connect that here to Hamilton, and we're going to discuss road tolls later because, of course, Hamilton is a part of the Greater Toronto Hamilton area, and everybody here is talking about the Gardner tolls. Here in Hamilton, our council is currently grappling with a budget crisis as reserve funds are depleted, the council having used reserve funds for operating and new spending. What advice do you have for municipalities trying to correct this behavior and moving towards connecting spending to revenue?
Well, I guess one of the things that I'd have to know, and I don't know in Hamilton's case, I mean, there are two types of reserve. There's a reserve and a reserve fund. It's a kind of distinction that the province makes, and I can't exactly remember what it is. But to a large extent, reserve funds are monies that are put into specific funds with the intent of using those for specific services in the future. In other words, it's earmarked revenues. Now, you could have some general capital funds. Some cities in the past used to say, okay, we're going to now put a 1%, 2%, 3 percentage point increase in the property tax. The revenue from that's going to go into a capital fund. The capital fund then would be used to fund future capital expenditures. That's a practice that has been done across a number of cities. And of course, the money accumulates and gets spent on large projects if and when the large projects are needed or deemed to be needed. So that practice is followed quite a few places. And there's no question, if you've been accumulating funds for years for capital projects, I'm thinking major roads is one, or could be major parks, I suppose, if you looked at it that way, or it could be a major fire hall or a police station. If you've been accumulating funds, your reserves will build up. And, of course, when you spend it, then the reserves go down because that money will then be used up.
Another part of your paper that I think people should really take a read for, and we have a link to it on the Public Record Radio website, I found your description of municipal services into two categories to be interesting. You describe private good characteristics and public good characteristics. How do you define services, and what does that mean for municipal revenue generation?
Well, the reason we've done that, and it's once again a practice that's been followed for a few years now in a lot of the public finance discussion, The essence is a private good is basically defined as a good. Once it's consumed or used by one person, it is not available or accessible to anyone else. For example, you turn your water tap on, you get a glass of water. That water is not available to anyone else. It's been used by you. You are the sole beneficiary. Those are private goods. And the reason that we make this distinction is you can say, okay, for those kind of services that are private goods, you can actually charge people for those goods directly. You do not need to use the tax base. You would use a user fee. That's why water and sewer now is basically entirely funded from user fees, because we can identify the users. We know who they are. When they use that service, it's not available to anyone else, and so you can charge them for it. Now, a public good is a good, by comparison here or contrast, is a good that once it is available and you use it, it does not discourage or mean that other people cannot use it. For example, you build a sidewalk down the street. You walk on that sidewalk. I can walk on that sidewalk too. Somebody else can walk on that sidewalk. So it's available to everyone. So you can't basically charge selected people for that and not other people, because it's available to everyone. The same with neighborhood parks, same with police protection, and the same with fire protection. Once they're available to everyone. Now, not everyone uses them, but they are available to everyone. And because they're available to everyone, those services should be funded from a local tax. And, of course, at this point, the only tax that cities basically have in Canada is the property tax. So it means public good services with public good characteristics are then funded from the property tax.
User fees and tolls. Road tolls in the Gardiner Expressway. I don't think I need to describe what that's about. I'm sure everybody listening is well aware of John Tory's plan to implement tolls on the Gardiner. You and your co-author have been interviewed extensively on this topic, and I've linked to those interviews on the website with this episode. Toronto's chief planner says 40% of vehicles on the Gardiner are from outside of Toronto. Much like Toronto, Hamilton has two municipal highways forming the south and eastern legs of our ring highway. We don't have figures here in Hamilton, but our councillors are musing about implementing road tolls for out-of-town drivers only. What are the merits of road tolls, and is it practical to implement tolls for out-of-town users only?
I'm not quite sure how you would do it for out-of-town users, unless you basically told everybody, and then if they had a City of Hamilton address when they went into the database, you know, if you do it by registering the car in some sense, either by a license plate tag that could be used or something on the windshield, and then just basically not charging them. I think it would make it administratively complicated, plus I don't think it would be fair. It seems to me to be a silly complication to achieve a bad policy. I mean, let's just go back and take a look at it. When you build highways or streets, they are now funded from the local revenue base to a large extent. There may be some capital funding from the province, but the operating costs become a big deal. And the operating costs are funded from the local revenue base. The local revenue base is dominated by the property tax and a set of user fees. So you've got a choice. You can say, how are we going to fund those highways? We're going to fund them out of charges that we put on the people who use those highways, or are we going to fund them from a tax on everybody in the city, regardless of who uses it? So what's wrong with saying to a Hamilton resident, if you use that highway, you pay a share of the cost, just as if I come in from out of town, I use the highway, I pay a share of the cost. It seems to be not to be fair, nor to be, and it seems to be complicated at all, just to say you're only going to charge people who are from out of town. I think you charge everybody who uses the road, regardless of where they come from, because what you're saying is you use, you pay. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think most of taxpayers and citizens accept that.
And you mentioned briefly administering the revenue tool. I'm going to follow up with the question of, when you create a new fee, how do you weigh that benefit of that fee against the administration of the fee? Is there a way to balance the two to know which fees are make sense to charge and which ones do not? And I'll actually specifically cite our council's considering implementing a bicycle licensing fee, for example.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to implement a tax that's going to have huge administrative costs. So essentially, you've got to, if you do, you're just introducing nuisance taxes. You're creating up an administrative structure, bureaucracy, to use a tax that's going to collect very little revenue. So I don't think anybody wants to do that. In some cases, the administration can be pretty simple. I mean, if a lot of it is done electronically, there is a cost involved in terms of setting up an electronic device. You know, for toll roads, you have to set up the electronic equipment along the highway. Once you get that set up, it's done. Then the administering of it after that, with computers now and technology, should be fairly straightforward and quite simple. There will obviously be some cost, but the cost will be only a fraction or share of the total revenue. The bicycle license, I don't know what it would cost to administer that. Do you have bicycle police to enforce it? I really don't know. I mean, I don't see electronic devices being set up. So I'm not at all sure what the administrative costs of it. I suppose if bicycles use roads, you can make an argument. If bicycles are using roads, which they do, cars use roads, cars pay a motor vehicle license fee every year to use roads, maybe it's reasonable to ask people who have bikes to pay a fee as well. I think that could be defended, certainly on the basis of a relevant user fee. In terms of revenue generated, I have no idea what it would be in Hamilton. In terms of the cost of administering it, I have no idea what that would be. Clearly, if the cost was equal to or higher in the revenue, I suppose you might say it's not worth having it. But if the cost of administering is considerably less than the revenue, you could argue it probably is worth having it.
And on more user fees, your report did go a lot into user fees as a form of revenue generation. Users fees and garbage. User fees generally get a bad name, or in Hamilton's context, maybe a bad smell. Hamilton City Council knows we can't afford our current garbage collection service. Our landfill in Glanbrook has a limited life, and it's not easy to create new landfills. We're failing to meet our goal of a 65% waste diversion rate by 2008. We're now entering 2017, and we're only at 48%. And professional staff reports commissioned by council state we must change our current system. Despite this, councillors have said very clearly that when the next report comes forward, they're not going to vote for any changes. User fees are off the table, but your report says waste collection is a service that should have user fees. Could you explain why you suggest that that's a service that should be funded by user fees?
Well, of course waste should be funded by user fees. I mean, it's a no-brainer to say it shouldn't be, in my view. It's one of the obvious ones. You can see the garbage on the street. You know who's putting it out. You can identify them. Charge them. Could lead to more recycling. People be a lot better at recycling, minimize their garbage collection, and they might even put pressure on manufacturers, producers, and that to stop packaging things to the extent they currently package them, thus saving some costs. But I mean, it's preposterous to argue that you shouldn't use user fees for garbage collection. One of the criticisms of many municipalities in Canada do now use user fees, and in fact, in the last 15 years, a large number of them have moved in that direction, largely to take pressure off the property tax base, but also to encourage people to become more efficient in what they throw out and to get them to concentrate more heavily on recycling. The one criticism of user fees that's often made is people take their garbage out into the country and throw it in the ditch. Well, you know what? For a buck a bag, which is usually what the fee is, how many times are you going to do that? It just doesn't happen. In fact, they have found there's been virtually none of that happening. So I just don't understand the argument for saying you shouldn't use user fees for garbage.
Your report, and again, I really encourage people that listen to the show and are very interested in this discussion to read the report, because it's a fairly short report, but it's packed with information and it's very accessible language. You talk about different funding tools, and Ontario municipalities are very limited in how they can raise revenue, and they lack redistributive tools. Your report says income tax is the appropriate funding tool for social housing and social assistance. Both of those are major issues in Hamilton. Why should we and how should we implement an income tax for municipal social services?
The argument that you should implement a municipal income tax is based on what has been done, what is done now in a lot of U.S. and European cities where cities have their own municipal income tax revenue. And here, what we're arguing that cities should have access to that tax, major cities, Hamilton being one, should have access to the opportunity, at least, maybe we'll phrase it, should have the opportunity to use a tax on personal income. We're not talking about a tax on corporations or business. We're talking about a tax on personal income. They should be able to use that if they so choose. They may decide that they want to take some pressure off the property tax, so they're going to use an income tax. It's very, very easy to administer. Mind you, the province would have to approve this, and there isn't any indication at the moment they're about to. But who knows, sometimes provincial governments change with appropriate pressure from municipalities. It would be very easy to do. You could simply say, everybody now who fills in the personal income tax form, your postal code is on the form, your address is on the form, you fill out, you have your provincial tax payable, you have your federal tax payable, and you calculate your provincial tax payable, and you could have a surtax, you might say a 1% surtax, for example, on the amount of provincial income tax you pay. So 1% of $5,000 is $50. So if you paid $5,000 this year in provincial income tax, you had a 1% surtax on that. 1% of $5,000 is $50. That would then go to the province. The province would collect the money and remit it to the city. So administratively, it's really very simple, as long as the province permits you to piggyback onto their income tax. And that's the general approach to city income taxes in the U.S. Now, there are a few cities that actually choose to run their own income tax system. So they basically set up the administrative structure and run it. We were not recommending that. We think that is unnecessary and it's costly, but we're recommending a simpler version. The advantage of this is that the property tax is generally a good tax for funding services that to a large extent go to property. The income tax is largely a good tax for funding those services that are to people or redistribute it. So social services and social housing are services for people. And we think that if you could fund, if you could give the municipalities access to a personal income tax, those revenues could be directed, or some of those revenues could be directed towards fulfilling the need to meet your social services and social housing commitments.
In this area of the report, you spoke about how the property tax does not reflect necessarily people's income. So it doesn't reflect their circumstances, and you specifically cited those who are asset rich but income poor, with a specific reference in there to seniors who live on fixed incomes, but in the case of Hamilton and Toronto, may have assets, their houses, which have gone up significantly in value. One of the things that your report had noted was that a income tax or user fees would be fairer to those individuals. Could you explain a little bit why that was noted in the report?
Well, one of the things, the property tax is used to fund, at the moment, is used to fund a wide range of municipal services, and that's true in every city in Canada. These services are expensive. Fire and police is expensive, and they go up every year. Social housing is expensive. Those costs rise. If you're going to meet these expenditure commitments or needs, then you've got to use the property tax. The problem that some people have is the house they live in has increased dramatically in value. If they bought the house 40 or 50 years ago, and they might have paid $40,000 for it, and now the house might be worth $1.2, $1.3 million, maybe more, maybe not that much, but it's well up there. So they've got a lot of their, what you call asset rich, in the sense they've got a really valuable asset, but they don't have enough income to pay the property tax, because the property tax is going to be based on a percentage of the market value of your house. So if your house goes to $1.2 million, and you take a percentage of that for the property tax, whatever the property tax rate happens to be in your city, then your property tax has gone up. So you may be in a situation where the property taxes are rising here, but your income isn't rising, and you're going to have a great deal of difficulty maintaining ownership of that house. What access to other taxes, like the income tax, says, if you can take pressure off the property tax, then that's not likely to go up as fast. The income tax is based on ability to pay. So the people whose incomes have gone up more or who are going up will pay more, and it will take some basic pressure off the property tax. So we believe that this is a particularly important component, because you take the Golden Horseshoe area in Hamilton, in the Greater Toronto and Hamilton area more specifically, I suppose. I mean, the increase in housing values in some of those places has just gone up tremendously. And there are a lot of people living there whose income haven't risen that much, or their earnings, their income that they earn from work now is going up that much. And they're finding it that property tax is taking a larger and larger percentage of their income. So we think that this would just take some pressure off the property tax base.
Sales tax. Near the end of the report, there is a discussion of municipal sales tax. I found this to be fascinating, not so much from a policy point of view, but from how much revenue it could generate, just even a single percentage. In Hamilton, of course, we like to keep things entertaining in our politics. The implementation of the GST was a big deal here. Local MP Sheila Copps had to resign from the federal parliament after the Liberals reversed the promise to eliminate the tax.
Right.
She was subsequently reelected in a by-election. And so why a municipal sales tax, and how would it work?
Well, the problem with the municipal sales tax, the discussion in that paper tries to give an indication of the amount of revenue you'd get from a municipal sales tax. At the moment, it would not be possible for one city such as Hamilton or Toronto or Ottawa or any city to basically bring in a municipal sales tax. And it's to do with the way in which the HST, the Harmonized Sales Tax, is basically administered and operated. And it's a little bit of a complicated technical argument, and not one that I want to get into on a program like this, because it gets a little complicated to discuss. But let me just say that the only place that the sales tax would work at the moment in Canada is in those provinces without a harmonized sales tax. And here you would take Winnipeg, for example, because there's a provincial sales tax, so they could piggyback onto the provincial sales tax. The same in British Columbia. Of course, in Alberta, they would have to set up their own sales tax structure in the city because the province doesn't have one. But in the provinces with the HST, like Quebec, Ontario, and those east of here, at the moment it's not going to be possible, because you can't add a 1% to the HST in Hamilton and nowhere else, because the administrative structure is not at the moment set up by Canada Revenue Agency to be able to sort that out and to pay the appropriate money back to the city of Hamilton. Until those administrative changes are made, or maybe they won't be, but if they were made, then it would be possible. But at this point, it's not possible. However, we did put, and we do have a discussion of that in the paper. However, we did put this topic in, this notion, because we wanted to give you some indication of the revenue generation power of a sales tax, and it is high.
It was definitely, it was quite the number, and you know, again, there's a lot of really interesting things in the report. And what the report really gets to, and it's used a simple language to explain it, is that tax is complicated. It requires finding the right balance, and municipalities right now are overly reliant on one form of tax, the property tax. How would you advise a politician who, say, came to you and said, I'm willing to spend political capital on making this change? How would you advise them to sell the change to the public?
Well, I'm not sure I have any skills and when it comes to doing it politically. My answer usually is, look, if it just makes sense, you should do it. And I think what's happened, I think what you're talking about basically is, are people willing to change their attitude? The problem we have at the moment is most people will argue, I don't want to pay taxes, I don't want to pay user fees. And yet when you say to them, do you realize what services you get for all the property tax you pay, they're actually quite surprised. And if you list a range of services that the property tax funds, you start with police and fire and sidewalks, local streets, neighborhood parks, recreational facilities, police protection, if I didn't happen to mention that, and you can go on and on and on. If you say, what does my income tax, my provincial income tax base? Well, it goes to Toronto, and I think it maybe funds a little bit of post-secondary education and some grants to go back to schools, health, and then you kind of think now maybe provincial parks. And the range of services is much less. And if you go to the federal government, it's the same way. So if you look at the services that affect an individual's quality of life, most of the services that people will list when you sit down and do this are at the local level, and yet there's only one tax there, and that's the property tax, and it's funding it. So when you do that, and there are a series of user fees, so when you do that, you're simply in a situation, you say, you know what, you need these services, you've just said you want these services, you've said you like them, so now what you have to do is say, how are you going to pay for them? Well, how are you going to do it? Are you going to do it based on charging people for the use of a service? I mean, garbage collection is a clear example. You use garbage collection, you pay for it. Toll road's a clear example. You use a highway, you pay for it. So, you know, you can expand that. Now, you've got to get attitudes to change. I started writing on toll roads for financing roads in the Greater Toronto and Hamilton area. I did a report that came out in January of 2008, and I got absolutely hammered in a lot of editorials in regional newspapers, letters to the editor, email, nasty emails, because I, and even radio phone-in talk shows that I went on, I got a number of, a lot of people very, very critical of any notion that you should ever think of bringing in tolls. John Tory was critical of tolls, as you'll recall, a few years ago. 2013, I did an updated version of the paper and expanded a bit, and I did it with a colleague from the University of British Columbia for Greater Toronto and Hamilton area. And basically, we made the same argument. The press was very different. The reaction I got was very different over this five-year period. People were now saying, yes, it's time. We need toll roads. We need some kind of tolling or congestion charges for roads. Attitudes changed. And if you look at a number of the little surveys that had been done over that five-year period, when people were asked, how should we pay for roads, it was amazing how over time, more and more people saying, if you use a road, you should pay for the road. And I think if you put that same discussion out to people with garbage, you would say, who should pay for it? Should everybody in the city pay for my trash or my garbage, or should I pay for it? All you have to do is look at your neighbor. He's got six garbage bags out there, and you've got one. And there's no bag tag, for example, you're paying out of the product. What are you going to say? Is this fair? I don't think so. He's using it far more than I am. He should pay more. So I think attitudes are changing, and I think if it's properly explained to people that, you look, you've only got certain, we've got a limited number of revenue sources here that we can use to fund services. How do you want to do it? And what services do you want to fund in what way? That's why we talked about linking services to tax revenues. So for those services where you can identify the people who use it, what is wrong with saying to those people, you pay for it? So, I think if it's properly packaged and sold, I think people are starting to accept that argument too.
Yes, I think you're right. I mean, the fact that John Tory brought out road tolls to the Gardner, and really the only negative reaction I'm seeing is in the 905 belt, where they're saying we weren't consulted, and the response back from 416 is, we're paying for the road, why don't you contribute your share? And even in Hamilton, I'm hearing in Hamilton, people are saying this is good. People who are going into Toronto are saying, I'm hopeful it decreases congestion. And people that even take the GO bus are going, I don't have to pay it, but it may make my ride quicker.
Oh, yeah. And well, you know what goes along? I mean, the thing that goes along with using tolls on roads, of course, and I should have mentioned this earlier, but if you're going to start tolling roads, then you really have to put the money into public transit and transportation. You've got to provide a really viable, high-quality public transit system. And I think Tory has indicated that a lot of the revenue collects he's going to put into public transit. You're trying to improve that alternative. You're trying to say, look, you can use the roads or you can do public transit. You use the roads, you're going to pay more, so we're going to improve the public transit system. And that seems to me to be his intent. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think it's a perfectly legitimate place to put the money. In economics, we call it the theory of second best. I won't go into an explanation of that on the radio, but it's a fully defensible practice in the theoretical model as well.
Dr. Kitchen, I want to thank you very much for taking your time today to discuss your report. It's an excellent report. I want to thank you for writing it. As a journalist who covers municipal affairs, I've learned a lot from it. Again, thank you very much for joining us. For the listeners, that we were speaking with Dr. Harry Kitchen. He is a professor emeritus in the economics department at Trent University and a co-author of a recent paper by the Monk School of Global Affairs Institute on Municipal Finance and Government entitled New Tax Sources for Canada's Largest Cities. What are the options? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.